Falcons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. I'm one of your hosts, Jay Adams. Joining me as always every week, rain or shine, sleet, snow, hail, or achy fingers, Daniel Cox is here.
Just like the Postal Service, right?
Yes. Well, yeah.
But isn't that going to change? I heard something about Saturday.
Yeah, they're thinking about doing that stopping Saturday delivery. I don't know. My dad's a mail carrier, so I hope.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, yeah, he is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's done it for I think it's like 37 years in Western New York, walking outside in the snow.
Seriously?
Yeah, every day for 37 years.
That's awesome. As a kid, I loved the mail.
Yeah.
So in turn, I love all mailmen.
Okay. As an adult, that's awesome. As an adt, I don't like mail. Because it's all bills
and
junk.
Yeah, really. I hear that.
So my dad gets mad at me for saying that. But we've spent a minute on mail, so let's move on to other topics. We're going to join you here every week. We're going to keep this podcast going. And we're going to talk about a variety of topics. And, you know, unfortunately, we're not in the season anymore. It's a very sad, sad week as we realize that the football season is completely over now. And But we get ready for the combine and the draft and all the other fun off-season activities. But the Super Bowl was just over the weekend, and I know a lot of people either didn't watch because they're either bitter or sad or couldn't face it. Huh. I thought I was going to be one of those people and just not watch it and do something else. But I watched it, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a great game.
Phenomenal game.
Yeah. And, you know, and the power outage aside, I mean, I felt like it was, all the ancillary things along the sides of it, you know, the performances and everything were great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't think I ever really thought that I wouldn't watch it.
Yeah.
I kind of planned to watch it all along. I know in the beginning of the game, when they're doing the national anthem, I got a little frustrated there for a minute. I was like, man, we should be there.
Yeah.
We all should be there.
I don't think there's a Falcons fan who didn't think that.
Yeah.
You know, at some point during Sunday's festivities. And
absolutely.
But, you know, I'll say great game. I really enjoyed it. I think it was everything that you want a Super Bowl to be. I think from a Falcons standpoint, it shows that, hey, we're not the only team that, you know, gets up by a healthy margin and then
ends
up succumbing to the ebbs and flows of a football game.
Right.
You know, you saw where Baltimore, you know, they start the second half, they return that kick, they're up 28-6. Everything looks like it's in hand. The lights go out, of course. Yeah. You know, and who knows who's behind that? Is it, you know, Kaepernick's over there pulling the plug or what's going on? But, you know, the momentum shifts, but that's what football's about.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because so much attention was put on the Falcons and how, you know, they would get these leads and, you know, the other teams would come back and, you know, but that happens to everyone.
It's like, I mean, you almost have to expect it. When you're playing teams of the caliber that, you know, Baltimore, San Francisco, Atlanta, Seattle, I mean, these are good teams.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think many people felt like this season was a year where a team got into the playoffs that maybe didn't quite deserve it. You know, they got in, they snuck in because they won their conference and their conference was not so good. You know, we've seen some of that happen in the past. I felt like everyone, it seemed like the teams that were in it were the upper echelon, the teams that earned it. You know, had a right to be there and they were the quality teams, and I just don't think you can just shut down teams like that in the playoffs. So, I mean, I think this, the postseason kind of showed that a lot. You know, not just the Falcons games. I mean, there were other instances. I mean, what didn't the Ravens had to come back against Denver, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was that pass where that guy got by, you know, on the other side of the secondary. I think it was Jacoby Jones, in fact, that pulled them, you know, got them back in the game, and they came back and won. So, I think this is kind of the new NFL in a way. I think we're starting to see closer games, higher scoring, obviously, in a lot of ways. But, teams that aren't going to give up until it's completely over.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, you're going to see more and more of these closer games, especially as, you know, the game becomes much more offensive-minded. The NFL is more focused on scoring, and we've seen some of that with the rule changes in recent years. So to me, it just kind of validates that, hey, you know, not the issue of getting a big lead and losing it isn't just exclusive to the Falcons.
Right, right.
And, you know, sometimes we're in a vacuum, you know, and we just kind of look at it's just the Falcons. And so we're like, oh, man, this is a problem. And then all of a sudden you see other teams who experience it and you're like, oh, okay. You know, that makes sense. This isn't just a problem for one team. It's a problem for all 32 teams.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think, you know, defensive coaches especially are going to have to face in coming years is just how do you hold on to those big leads once you get them? Especially when you're talking about these offenses like, you know, the pistol or the read option, whatever you want to call it. But you see more and more of these downfield teams. The Falcons are now a downfield passing team.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's going to be tougher for defenses to keep the Falcons from coming back if they do happen to get a big lead.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like the position of defensive coordinator in the NFL is going to become one of those, we're going to have to spot them 14 points and then try to figure out how to stop it from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a given that we're not going to see a lot of shutouts anymore. We're not going to see low-scoring games, I don't feel like, because I just feel like the innovation and the talent on the offensive side of the ball is such that – and, you know, there are some rules that kind of allow that to be the case as well. And it's going to be challenging continuing forward. And it almost seems like – how much more can you do on defense? Like, what new scheme, what new, like, creative idea are we going to see next on defense? Because it's clearly, I think we're at a place in the evolution, so to speak, of the league where, you know, the offensive side of the ball in general has kind of put its best foot forward and come up with some really cool ideas, you know, some of what we're seeing with the quarterbacks as well, and some of these insanely talented wide receivers, like guys like Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, you know, what can defenses do that's innovative to stop some of that? And I think that's going to be interesting to see. And I know this offseason, you know, defensive coordinators certainly will be focused on that read option, that mobile quarterback thing, where in the mobile quarterback piece of the league is kind of changing as well. It's not quite the style that we saw with, you know, the Michael Vicks and the Randall Cunninghams of the world in the past. It's a little bit different now. So
right.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, speaking of quarterbacks, and this is not a topic that we discussed before we push the record button here.
Okay.
But I'm going to throw it at you.
All right.
You know, you look at back in 2008 and the two quarterbacks that are always linked together.
Oh, yes.
Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan. It's a little different now. Joe Flacco has a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Ryan is next. Where do we see the pressure for Matt Ryan right now going into next year? I mean, he's always going to be measured against Joe.
Okay, that's an interesting. Yeah,
somebody's going to have to bring it up at some point.
No, and I heard something on a show I was listening to or watching earlier in the week about what quarterback has the most pressure now to win a Super Bowl. Is it? And the list was, you know, Matt, Tony Romo, Matt Schaub. Jay Cutler, basically like that, those handful of guys that haven't won a Super Bowl yet that are kind of, you know, on that fringe of, you know, what most would consider the top quarterback in the league. And I just feel like there's not, I don't think anyone necessarily saw the Ravens winning the Super Bowl this year. I don't think that anyone, you know, sat down at their computer to type out Joe Flacco is going to lead you know, the Ravens to a Super Bowl this year. It just kind of happened. And there were a lot of things that happened for the Ravens that got them there. But, Joe, I mean, Flacco, he played a great game.
Listen, phenomenal.
We can't say that he didn't. He deserved the MVP.
Absolutely.
You know, Jacoby Jones did what he did, and there was some other, you know, impressive players that maybe earned, you know, like an alternate MVP award or something like that. But you can't argue with the fact that Joe Flacco just straight up earned it.
He did.
I feel like a guy like Jay Cutler, you know, considering like a new scheme change in Chicago, Tony Romo, who's kind of starting to get up there in age a little bit, and I think there's some concerns there about what's happening in Dallas. I feel like some of those guys have more pressure than maybe Matt does this year. You know, pressure is a strange thing to talk about, but I don't feel like Matt's quite there in his career where it's like, why haven't you done this yet, Matt Ryan?
Yeah, so exactly. I think though that now that Flacco has won that time will come soon. However, I have to think that Matt Ryan today has to love the position he's in. You know, he's got a great offense around him.
Yeah.
He's got a great team around him. He played his best year of his career.
Easily.
And you're 10 yards away from going to that game. You know, and I hate to bring that up again because we all, you know, but I think if you're Matt, you got to like your chances. And because of that, Matt's not the kind of guy who feels pressure anyways. You know, we know that. We've just in talking to him. And that's not just a line. That's not just – that's the truth. I mean, this guy is so prepared all the time that there's no pressure to feel. But I feel like a big part of not having that pressure and not feeling that pressure is the people that he has around him. And I think that's what makes him one of the most likely candidates to win a Super Bowl in his career. You know, if you keep the pieces around you and you know, look, nobody knows what's going on with Tony Gonzalez. He's still figuring out what his future entails. But, you know, if he comes back another year, it's going to be hard to argue that the Falcons aren't one of the top teams in the league to play in a Super Bowl next year.
Well,
just in my opinion.
No, I agree. I mean, what does the nation say about that, though? Is there I know earlier in the week John Clayton?
Yeah. Yeah, John Clayton, ESPN.com wrote his top five most likely candidates to play in the Super Bowl next year, and the Falcons finished as his number five selection. And
Denver, New England, Green Bay, and Seattle ahead of them.
Yep.
It's pretty interesting.
It is interesting, and those are all four very good teams. All had very good years. You got to figure that.
Three of which the Falcons will face next year.
Right, right, which is an important thing to look at. But, you know, but that's four other teams with four very good quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to figure Seattle's going to be better. Russell Wilson's going to have another year under his belt. You got to expect San Francisco's going to be right back there.
Yeah.
Washington could be a team to contend with. Again, if RG3 comes back healthy, Sean Payton back with the Saints changes things up a little bit, you know. But being one of those teams with that are included in that list of most likely to play in a Super Bowl,
you know, and you know, we discuss, you know, the schedule and who the Falcons are going to play, but let's not. I mean, you know, look at on the other hand, I mean. Those teams have to play the Falcons too. You know, it's not
absolutely.
The Falcons are no longer. I don't feel like are like the little sisters of the poor or whatever they say. You know, I think as we continue to move on, I think next season, I think some of the national perspective of the Falcons next season is going to change, and I think you'll start to see it in the off season. And I think when you know preseason and the training camp starts to roll around, I feel like some of the national notions, so to speak. Of viewpoints on the Falcons, or I think some fans are going to be pleased with how the team's going to be viewed.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's going to be completely different. You know, a lot of the reasons that like you lack the media coverage was because of the past playoff performances,
right.
And now you've proven that you can win a playoff game, and not mm-hmm. only that, but you can win a playoff game in dramatic fashion,
yeah.
against all odds, and you can come out the next week and come. Just oh so close to playing in the Super Bowl.
Keep it close, you know.
I don't think that media members are going to be able to say the same things this year that they said about the Falcons last year, and that's because of how they performed in the postseason. And I think, you know, as disappointed as you are that you didn't get to that point, I think there's still a lot to be proud of with this team,
absolutely.
And the future is extremely, extremely bright.
Absolutely,
extremely bright. And speaking of the future. Let's get on to maybe some draft talk.
Oh, draft talk.
Draft talk. It's coming up.
We need some kind of sounder.
But yeah, the draft obviously coming up in April. We've got the combine coming up later this month, starting February 23rd on NFL Network. You can see all the coverage there. But this week we unveiled the very first mock monitor of 2012. And if you're new to the mock monitor, basically what I do is I spend most of my time going around the web and finding reputable and upstanding mock drafts around the internet. And I take all of those and I compile them in one place just for you.
That's very kind of you, Jay.
Isn't it?
Yes.
I'm such a kind person like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got all these mocks in one place, and you can see who they have the Falcons selecting at number 30 overall. And what I kind of do is I just do that every week. Every Tuesday you can catch that on AtlantaFalcons.com. And I just talk a little bit about the trends that we see from that. And I think the biggest trend, and I had written about it a week ago, is that the mocks have the Falcons pegged for tight end or defensive line, one of the two. And, you know, judging on based on the needs, you would think that those are pretty accurate.
Doesn't seem unreasonable, you know, that a tight end or a defensive lineman, you know, tackle or end.
With end being the most popular
choice
among the mock drafts.
But, you know, I feel like, you know, a defensive tackle to add into that rotation is never a bad thing. I think for me, when I approach the draft, like, I always think, you know, especially with a first-round pick, you know, can this team land a starter? Or I guess I feel like, you know, that first-round pick needs to be a guy that's going to be able to step in and start right away.
Yeah.
That maybe doesn't always happen, but I think that's the goal. Unless you're doing some different things, like San Francisco this past year drafted A.J. Jenkins, I believe it was wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
He ultimately played like three games this year.
Yeah,
that was their first round pick.
But the curve for wide receivers is a lot different than
this
a lot of other positions.
This is
it
true.
It usually takes about 3 years for them to develop. Unless you're Julio Jones.
Unless you're Julio Jones.
Just a freak.
You were born to play football.
Right.
So that's kind of like, that's what I always think about is, you know, if you want to land a first round starter, you know, where would he start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so tight end is you know, assuming that Tony Gonzalez doesn't come back, is a good place to start, you know, at least, you know, given some competition to guys like Michael Palmer, you know, already, and Chase Kaufman already on the roster. I don't think anyone...
Tommy Gallardo as well.
Yeah, exactly. He's coming back from an injury. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a little bit of competition right there to begin with. So then today today's Wednesday. It's the off season.
They start to
forget about what day it is because it doesn't really matter.
Right.
We did the draft spotlight, and we got Matt Miller from Bleacher Report, who... Not only is he a super kind, nice guy like yourself, Jay, he's also very intelligent. Follows the draft and, you know, college prospects throughout the season. He's very good at what he does, and he's nice enough to join us again this year in providing some insight into some of these guys. And Zach Ertz was his first, the first round pick for the Falcons in his first mock draft. And, you know, I think we'll probably say the word mock draft about 2,000 times in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
And last week I said, you know, I was going to focus on Sam Montgomery, the defensive end from LSU. Matt Miller himself changed his pick. He was going to go with Sam Montgomery, and maybe I shouldn't be sharing this, but he had some late, you know, the word completely escaped me, but for whatever reason, he decided to change his mind, and he went with Zach Ertz, so that's who we kind of talked about today. And you know what? If Tony Gonzalez doesn't come back, I think you could do a lot worse than picking up a guy, a Stanford graduate who, you know, good size, 6'5", I believe. Yeah, 6'6". A little more athletic than maybe he's given credit for. Highly intelligent as well. Not just, you know, book smarts with, you know, his Stanford studies, but everyone raves about David Shaw and John Harbaugh's system at Stanford, and he was a key part of that. So I think that's a great place to start.
Yeah, and the tight end position is interesting in the first place, especially when you look at what is on the roster. And you know, you got to take the 95% that Tony Gonzalez is sure that he's going to retire into account here and just say, okay, let's just hypothetically say that he does not come back. You've got Michael Palmer, Tommy Gallardo, and Chase Kaufman on the roster. But of those three, two of them fall in one category and one falls in the other.
Right.
And you've got Gallardo and Palmer who fall into the blocking tight end. Mm-hmm. And Gallarda, we heard Coach Smith say when he got injured and was placed on IR last year that Gallarda was the best blocking tight end on the team,
right,
on the roster. And so he was obviously you lose somebody who gains that kind of credibility that hurts. So then you look at Palmer. Palmer is a great blocker, in great run blocker, great pass blocker, but also he can catch.
Mm-hmm.
He's got great hands, and we saw it 2 years ago. He wowed both of us in training camp with some of the catches that he made, and I think that's only continued in his 2 years here in Atlanta. But then Chase Kaufman comes from out of nowhere, and you know, you get the injuries to some of the other guys, and suddenly he's thrust into a position where he's on the roster, and then he's making huge catches like the one he made against Seattle.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then you're thinking, okay.
That was such a clutch catch.
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah.
Such a great catch.
And everything happened so quickly. I think he got brushed under the rug a little bit. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
But here's a guy who was drafted pretty high.
Third round.
There were high expectations for him to Cincinnati, correct?
Yes.
Cincinnati picked him up.
Uh-huh.
And then things didn't pan out there. He got cut and then went to Tampa. Things didn't work out there. Mm-hmm. Falcons picked him up, put him on the practice squad, and maybe they think they've got something with him. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there, but you look at it and you probably, if you're Mike Smith, you're pretty happy that you got at least a little bit of a look at him in real-life game situations late in the season to kind of get a feel for maybe what he might be capable of. And who knows? You know, you could have a gem on your roster right now at that position. And I guess, you know, that all goes into the evaluation process and what they determine there. But when you talk about trying to fill Tony Gonzalez's position, certainly not an easy thing to do. But you've got some good groundwork, I think, already on the roster to work with. So if you bring in a young guy, you know, he's got some good guys to learn from.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, and it crossed my mind when I was writing the article that went up today, the Draft Spotlight, on Zach Ertz. You know, I was thinking it's unreasonable to expect the guy to come in, a tight end, if we were to draft a tight end in the first round, it's unreasonable, or any round for that matter, it's unreasonable for him to come in and replace Tony Gonzalez. You know, in the production, the leadership, all that aspects. You know, in fact, it's unreasonable to expect, you know, guys like Palmer and Kaufman and Gallarda to do the same thing. I don't think you necessarily need that. As Julio continues to emerge, you know, I think we see an evolution in the offense at some other positions. You know, tight end is still going to be like a key third down place. But I feel like, you know, the guy's not going to be expected to produce quite like Tony, you know, right away, especially. But back to Zach Ertz, you know, I feel like he's one of those guys that could come in and be a guy that does get you some good catches. He caught 69 passes, 898 yards, and 6 touchdowns as a senior this year. That's an All-American season he just had. That's pretty good numbers.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what you're looking for is, and like you said in the article that's on AtlantaFalcons.com now, his abilities within the red zone and in the end zone and on third down, that's where his strengths are. And when you look at Tony Gonzalez, I mean, that's what he did. You know, that's what he does is he is that threat whenever you're in those areas. So, like you said, you're not expecting this guy to come in and be Tony Gonzalez.
Right.
You can't expect anybody to do that. But you want to give Matt an option at that position so that because he's grown so accustomed to having such a reliable option there that you've got to have that outlet. So to me, I think, you know, if you're looking at tight end or, you know, and you don't want to go free agency with it, you know, any of the top tight ends in the draft look pretty good to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I like Zach Ertz. But the other guy, that's Tyler Eifert. Is that it? From Notre Dame. He's another guy that showed up on the mock monitor. In fact, you had him. They were tied as
the consensus
pick. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. It seems like it kind of feels to me like, and this is so early in the game, but it feels like tight end might be like might be a secondary thing in terms of what the Falcons want to accomplish in, sure. in the draft. Like, yeah. I just kind of get that feeling. I don't have anything to base that off of. I feel like the offense can compensate a little bit better for lacking a guy like Gonzalez with Julio coming into his third season, Jaquizz Rodgers doing the same. So
yeah,
just something to think about.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that my gut tells me that I don't know that they'll be looking tight end in the first round. I don't know that, but it just seems like it. When you've had the chance in the previous 2 years and you haven't pulled the trigger on it. And so that kind of tells me that, maybe it's not – you don't feel like you're getting the best value by taking that first round.
That's true.
So who knows? But, you know what's going to happen is the combine's going to come and everything's going to change and we're going to be talking about something completely different here in a few weeks. So maybe we don't dwell on it too long.
Yeah, that first round pick will come and –
Yeah, it'll probably now, has be some... anybody been right at all? I mean, last year, none of the mock drafts had us taking Peter Kahn or him falling that far.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the year before, nobody called the Julio Jones thing.
Yeah.
What about the year before? You got to tell me.
That was
the Sean Weatherspoon tip.
2009, right?
Were there mocks that had?
I had Sean Weatherspoon.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah,
Okay. So you're due. You're due for to be right.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like, before I came to join the Falcons, I did some things on some other websites, and the mock draft and the draft, the offseason stuff was something I really enjoyed and I got into. And yeah, my goal was always to be, get a handful of guys right, select.
Yeah.
These key, I had William Moore in the second round.
Wow.
So I was happy about that. But that's about it. Otherwise, I'd be completely wrong.
People ask me on Twitter all the time, who do you think? And it'll get even more so as we get closer to the draft. But it'll be like, who do you have the Falcons taking? Look, don't ask me. You want to know why? Because I'm terrible at that. I'm really, really bad at that. Everybody that I've been like, I think this is who we're going to go with because this, X, Y, Z. No, I'm just not so good at that.
Yeah.
I'm not good at predicting the future.
That's a shame.
So what we'll do is instead we'll give you the best analysis we possibly can and leave the picking for the people who do the picking.
Yeah, the experts.
All right. So we are going to bring in a brand new feature here on the podcast, and we are going to discuss – we should have some intro music for this too.
We should have music for everything,
basically,
especially considering I have an empty seat beside me.
Yeah,
AJ,
we don't have a singer.
AJ is not here anymore.
We do miss AJ.
Yeah,
but we're going to talk about the most interesting thing we saw this week. And Daniel, we've got about 6 minutes before the tape runs out. So.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead and lead us off?
Okay.
What was the most interesting thing you saw this week?
This came from ESPN.com. This is from our good friend Pat Jasinskas. He had a moment to speak with Arthur Blank down in New Orleans at the Super Bowl. I feel like this needs to be said because I think Falcons fans can kind of live and die by what Mr. Blank has to say about the team because I feel like he kind of sets the tone and the direction for the fans. I feel like they have a lot of respect and appreciation for his opinion on the team. And he feels like the direction is still positive for the Falcons. He's pleased with, he's not pleased with the outcome of the season and, losing in the championship game, not going to the Super Bowl, but, he's really happy with the organization itself. That's Thomas and Coach Smith and, everybody that's really, running things. But he did say we're not where we want to be. Smitty would be the first to say that, and Thomas would be right at his side saying that we're not going to be happy until we're playing in the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl. But otherwise, he publicly stated his support for the current administration, current coaching staff, and the direction for the Falcons. So I was happy to hear from Mr. Blank in the media this past week.
Yeah, that's great stuff too. For me, I'm going to go ahead and go with, I was going to go with the John Clayton thing.
Oh, my bad, Jay.
Discussed that. But I'm going to go ahead and talk real quick about the NFL.com power rankings.
Oh, power rankings. Out.
And, you know, we look, the power rankings are what they are and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And, you know, they don't mean anything. And
they don't?
Well, you know, no, they don't. In the grand scheme of things, they mean nothing. Yeah, and they're just somebody's opinion. But the Falcons on NFL.com ranked number 5 behind San Francisco, Baltimore. Well, Baltimore number 1. Sorry.
Okay.
San Francisco. I'm not going in any order.
Okay, gotcha.
Baltimore, San Francisco, New England, and Denver. So the Falcons number 5 behind Denver. Denver didn't even make it to its conference championship game.
You know what? I don't know, man. What do you think about that? I'll let you speak first.
You know,
and you probably have 2 minutes.
I'm not. I don't think it's an automatic foregone conclusion that, you know, your 4 best teams are the 4 teams that make it to their to the conference championship.
Yeah.
I don't think that, because you could have a year where the NFC is just totally stacked and you've got 2 really good teams that end up out of the conference championship game just by default, because you can only have 2. I don't know. I think I tell you what, I'll leave it at this. I would have loved to have seen Atlanta and Denver play again this year, later in the season, because I'm tired of hearing, oh, the Falcons caught Peyton Manning early. I don't like hearing that.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't know. For me, I think it would have been a very good rematch.
I agree totally. Lightning can strike twice. I feel like, you know, maybe Denver might be one of those teams that, you know, next season surprise some people in that maybe they aren't quite as good as the expectation was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teams start to take a step back, and I think they're a little older than, you know, maybe some people realize. So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah. So I don't know. Found it a little surprising, but I mean, it is what it is. It's a power ranking.
I wish we could get some teams, like, you know, just on the practice field sometimes and just kind of go at it.
Yeah. I wish I could get those hypothetical games going and just kind of
meet in the cow pasture.
Yes. Yeah. Do some simulations.
Yeah.
Daniel, next week I want you to run 10,000 simulations on the Falcons versus Denver in week 16.
Okay, I can do that on Madden.
And see, and see what the percentage is.
Okay, 10,000.
Right? You'll report.
Okay.
You'll report back next week.
I have to get started right away.
Yes, and don't sleep. Well, that's going to do it for another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast. Make sure to join us next week as Daniel talks about his 10,000 simulations and the all the visions he saw due to his sleep deprivation. We'll be back for another edition next week, so make sure to join us, and we'll talk more football and more Falcons. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.